Hello and welcome everyone. My name is Arzu Mohseni and it's a great pleasure introducing tonight's program with Julian Schnabel and Petra Jolloy-Hertz. We're here to celebrate the publication of Julian Schnabel Polaroids with a discussion and book signing. This magnificent book is a collection of large format Polaroids taken by the artist using a rare 20 by 24 Polaroid camera, recording the day-to-day transformative activities in his studio and residence. Julian Schnabel is an acclaimed and prolific painter and filmmaker. His work has been the subject of retrospective exhibitions held at the Tate Gallery in London, the Palazzo Venezia in Rome, and Beijing World Art Museum, among others, and is part of major permanent collections, including the Museum of Modern Art in New York, Georges Pompidou Center in Paris, and the National Gallery in Washington, D.C. In 1996, almost 20 years after his first solo exhibition, he wrote and directed his first film, Basquiat, followed by his second film, Before Night Falls, winning the Grand Jury Prize at Venice Film Festival. Diving Bell and the Butterfly, made in 2007, received numerous awards, including a Best Director at Cannes Film Festival. His new film, Miral, has been shown at various international film festivals this month. Petra Jolloy-Hertz is an associate professor of literature at the University of Düsseldorf and a freelance curator, writer, and editor. She conceived the book and the exhibition, Julian Schnabel Polaroids, held at NRW Forum in Düsseldorf and Bernheimer Fine Art Photography in Munich. Her other publications include Lucas Reiner, Los Angeles Trees, and Christopher Thomas, New York Sleeps. I'd like to thank our guests for appearing in tonight's program, making the eighth event in an art book series celebrating the essential beauty and importance of art publications with discussions and presentations by world-renowned artists, critics, curators, historians, and writers. Copies of Polaroids are available for purchase and signing right after the Q&A session at the end of tonight's program, when there will also be time to take a closer look at the gorgeous Polaroids that surround us. Also, I'd like to encourage everyone to visit the art and picture collections at Mid-Manhattan Library across Fifth Avenue from here, where you can freely browse one of the most accessible and comprehensive circulating collections containing 40,000 books and videos covering every aspect of art, architecture, and design, and 1 million pictures covering 12,000 subjects. Thank you all for your attendance, and now it's time to turn the floor to Petra Jolloy-Hertz and Julian Schnabel.
Thank you.
So thank you very much for this introduction. I think I'm honored to be invited to the New York Public Library in context of the series, an art book, about my book, Julian Schnabel, Polaroids. I think the building breathes such spirit and history, and the room is gorgeous. Thank you very much for coming. Thank you very much for the invitation. And I'm happy that Julian is here today. Thank you, Julian. It is a great opportunity to discuss with you a very special facet of your work. Everyone knows Julian Schnabel, of course, over many years and the different faces of his work exhibited worldwide by the most prestigious institutions of art. Everyone knows his films, which have outstanding success. However, not this particular body of work we look today at and discuss the Polaroids. The book is the vehicle by which these Polaroids could be seen. It wants to reflect the beauty and uniqueness of these images. The book is the lens, the door to enter the world of Julian Schnabel's photography. It reveals these images to the public. Though we have the book, I'm grateful that it was possible to display around a few Polaroids so that we can see original works, and I think later with Julian's help we will have a closer look. I first want to thank everybody who is involved in the book. I want to thank you, Julian, for your commitment.
You're welcome.
which you have devoted to the project. I would like to thank the studio assistants, especially Porfirio Munoz, who is here tonight. And there's a very important person. It's Leah Stepkin, Strange Matter, based in New York, who has done a very beautiful design. Thank you very much, Leah. Here she is. And, of course, the thank to Prestel Publishing in Munich as well as in New York, here especially to Ali Gutloff. I was asked, and I hope you are fine with this, it would take 5 minutes. I don't know if you could wait 5 minutes for Julian Schnabel to tell a few words about the genesis of the book.
Well, I don't know how
you
important
know.
That is.
You
I think I th- no. I mean, I don't know. It depends. It seems like it's a little peculiar in a way, the whole situation, because nobody's actually seen the book that's sitting in the audience. Is that correct? So we're kind of one person. So we're kind of talking about something that nobody knows. So maybe it's not so interesting to talk about it too much. We could almost hand the books out to everybody in the audience, and then they could, you know, look at them and say, well, why did you do this? Or, what's this here? I mean, I don't know. Or
this is against the rules, so we have to discuss 1 hour, and then we can hand over to the audience.
But it seems to me that we could do a couple of things. One could just... What would you like to do as an audience? I mean, really, what would you like to do? Okay, great. Okay, that's a good beginning. Because that can... Now we're that's good. Okay. The concept of the book... I think this is too close to my beard. I'm going to move it down a little so it's not so annoying for everybody. If I could get it off my neck. Hi.
Hi there.
I guess you'd have to just subordinate style for function on occasion, so I won't keep my shirt buttoned. Okay, that's better, isn't it? Okay, so it was Petra's idea to make this book. She is an art historian and had been involved in my work for a long time, and had been coming to my studio over the years. And I started taking photographs, not thinking I was going to show them or make a book of them. I want to turn this down a little. Is there a way to turn this down a teeny weeny bit? Thank you, just a little. And so the reason I started to take photographs in the first place was to record sculptures and paintings in my studio. I found that the pictures that people were taking of my work never really looked like the work or felt like the work. And they seemed to be sort of anemic images of and you couldn't get a sense of the place. So it sort of started by accident. Come on up here to the front if you want to sit down, no problem. A woman asked me if I wanted to use the 24 by 20 inch camera because there was some sort of a benefit for, I can't even remember what it was for, if it was for abused children or there was some kind of good reason why if I took a picture with this camera, they could sell it for some money. And so I was out in Montauk, I paint outside there, and I asked if they'd send the camera out, and the camera came out there. It's quite a large object, and it's you have to throw a black curtain over yourself, and there's you plug it in, It's very cumbersome and awkward, but what you get is an extraordinary loss, extraordinarily large negative. The negative is the Polaroid itself. And it's almost like photosynthesis in a way. There's something, it's almost like a direct replica of what you're photographing. It's the closest thing I could find to eyesight that I'd found. And working outside with that, this is usually an object that people use in a studio. So when you work outside with it, if there are light leaks and things like that, I welcome those kind of accidents. And I like the physical quality of the Polaroid as a material, as a stasis, where marks could occur, where if things are overexposed, I use that, and I don't have a hierarchical notion of the perfect photograph of what I think, if it's everything is in focus. And in fact, I like the irregularity of if the gate gets stuck because you're photographing outside, you will get an irregular shape. Like you see those photographs to your right, there's some photographs of surfboards, black surfboards, and that's actually in a green studio I paint outside. But the fact that those are black and white, everything is, there are different gradations of gray and black and white. But the irregular edge on the top comes because when you're pulling the photographs out of the gate, they get stuck. And so I like to work out in the heat because I like the fact that, in the same way that if there's some paintings I made that were on felucca sails from Egypt, and I saw the sails, they were in irregular shape, and I thought, well, why should I make them rectangular to conform to I don't know what? So I drew in whatever kind of shape I could into the triangular shape of the felucca sail and made seven paintings that were irregular shapes that looked more like pyramids. That seemed like a good answer to I don't know what. You want to ask me anything, Petra?
Yeah, perhaps I can add, I think in this digital era when you can manipulate everything if you what you want, you give already the answer what is attractive to this media, because it seemed to be very, very old-fashioned. So what, in fact, is the attraction to work with this?
Right. That's an interesting concept. In fact, there's something... Can I have that book for a minute? There's something at the beginning of the book that was... and it says... Leah, you did do a beautiful job here. That's not what it says. It says... Art brings you into the eternal present every time you see it in person. Traditionally, photography is supposed to capture an event that has passed, but that's not what I'm looking for. Photography that brings the past into the present when you look at it is called art. A photograph that I'm attracted to allows a detail to rise of its own accord. Now, there are two things. One, the use of this kind of sepia film actually makes something that's new look like it's old, really. And so that's the opposite of what is said in this book. And at the same time, whatever art you look at, if it's art, it does bring you into the present. If you saw a Caravaggio painting today, it'd be the first time that you saw it, whether he painted it 400 years ago, or if you saw the Battle of Algiers today or yesterday, it would be a fresh new movie for you. So whenever you come upon a work of art, it takes you into its present. And that's what I meant by saying that. But at the same time, my attraction to this camera is that it makes things look old. And so there's a kind of... they're like time maps in a way. And I like that. And I also like the fact that, yes, I'm in control to a certain degree, but then I'm not. Now, I don't know what these images look like. I'm always leery of showing images, slides of images, because obvious. And one of the reasons why I wanted to bring some of the photographs up here was that you could look at it stick that in my pocket. It's all right. I don't need any help.
That's okay.
I'm going to go like this. I mean, if we can make this a little... Yeah. See, if you look at it, the fact of it is that the photograph... I'm sorry. Yeah. That the photograph has... Yeah, I'll turn it that way in a minute. Has a physical body to it. The thing I like about it is that it's actually an object. So it feels more like painting... in this particular one, there's actually some ink on it, so it is more like painting. But the fact is, this kind of also looks like an image of vegetation in the Amazon. Do you agree? You're going to say no. tropical vegetation, can we say that? Okay, so... what it really is the garden at the Bel Air Hotel in Los Angeles. And I thought that if I took this, my experience with this camera made me think if I photographed the vegetation out there, you could make the garden at the Bel Air Hotel look like you were in the Amazon. And that kind of reminds me of... Joseph von Sternberg, when he was making Blue Angel, and somebody said to him, this doesn't look real at all. And he said, of course not. It's much better than reality. So anyway, obviously, the reason why I do it is because there's... I can pick up a different one, and we can... But I think you actually need to look at things. That's why I think you need to look at things in order to talk about them. And you need to see things in person, because when I was talking about the gate in this thing, this is one of those ones where the top of the photograph is irregular. I paint outside, so you've got this the sky. You really don't know. I like... things when you don't know where you are, what you're looking at, or what year it is. And that makes me feel like I'm not going to die. Because it means that if you can't tell me, you know, so that is, and I think that's one thing that art can do actually that life doesn't do. You see, life contains death. And art, unlike life, is a representation of life. So it's a denial of death. It doesn't include it. And that's why there can only be... There can never be pessimistic artists, even if the artist is tragic. There can only be talent and mediocrity. And that's not me. That's Tarkovsky speaking. Now, this is a photograph that has been overexposed, so there was no image on it. But the space that exists in this Polaroid space has some kind of infinite space to it. When I put ink on it, it seems to look like an Yves Tanguy or something like that. There's a kind of space that... So I don't have a preconception about what I want my photograph to look like. Now, there's something, you know, you could say, okay, that's a photograph of mine, or I might photograph something that looks more like... I'll show you this one for a second because it's kind of curious. Now, these photographs that are here just happen to be the only ones that were around. And so there was no hierarchical judgment about which photographs I wanted to bring over either. Now, this woman was actually... This photograph was taken... or the original image of this was taken in the 19th century, and this was a girl in a mental institution. And the photographs were taken by a French photographer, and they were about that big. And so I actually photographed this photograph with the 24 by 20 inch Polaroid camera. And then when you look at them or you see the gate of that, you think, oh, this was taken in the 20th century, but how come this woman looks like she's from another time in some way? And then I decided to paint on this one, but there's another version of it. I think it might be in the book that's not painted on. I took more than one picture, but obviously these are not additions. Every one of the photographs is unique. Then I had the idea that why does the Polaroid have to be unique? So I thought I'd take a Polaroid of the Polaroid, which I did. So on occasion there's more than one image, but they vary a bit. That's my son Olmu, who's 16 now, and he's wearing some pants on top of his head, looking like he's in the sheltering sky, or like a woman. And here's one picture of Mickey Rourke, who's a good friend of mine, but I'll leave it there. Anyway, any questions? Yes, dear. Now, that's a good question. I don't know what you said in the middle there, but what are there, 100 photographs in the book?
Yes.
There are 100 photographs in the book. I think I probably took about, is it 400 or 800?
Yeah, it's 400.
I think I probably took about 400 photographs over the past 8 years. And in this book, there are photographs of my children. They're photographs of friends of mine. I don't know if you use the word celebrities, but they're not to me. I mean, it just so happened that they're actors and people know who they are. But Chris Walken, Lou Reed, and Mickey Rourke are in the book. Placido Domingo also. He's not a friend of mine, Placido Domingo. I mean, he's not an enemy of mine. But I made a painting of him that's at the Metropolitan Opera. And when he came over, I asked him to come dressed in robes in a cape, and so he did. And there are pictures of my studio out in Montauk, where I work outside. In fact, my favorite picture of Placido Domingo is not even in the book, but I don't know if you could see that, but if you get the book, you will get to look at it more closely. Anyway.
Yeah, but the book represents in its selection the others, so it picks out from all.
It's a cross-section of photographs, but the fact is, and I think it's beautifully printed, this is my girlfriend. It's kind of a tribal photograph. And there are other pictures of places that I built. I built a building down on 11th Street. It looks kind of like a Venetian palazzo. And I built a studio out in Montauk. And I build a lot of things. I make things. So I tried to record things that I made. This is a sculpture called Lady Macbeth. And so there's I also wanted to use this camera because, for example, if you look at this, there's a painting here of a girl with no eyes. It's a painting I made in 2002, and if you see me sitting down there in the corner, you can tell that the painting's quite large. So if the person wasn't there, I don't think you would know how big the painting was. And I think that is sort of a in trying to make books about art, a lot of the time, if you don't show installation shots, I think that people don't really know. They don't have a context to put the paintings in. So I tried to do that. This is actually an interesting photograph. That's the building on 11th Street. But what it is actually is not really the building. It's actually a model of the building that's put into the landscape, and then I photograph that with this camera. Obviously, the building exists now, but I... So, to a certain degree, there is a level of, what, mischievousness or kind of, I don't know if it's disingenuousness or... I'm having fun with these images, and at the same time, there's... I realized when I had this show at the museum of these photographs that I understood why Marcel Duchamp made Le Bois en Valise. He could carry his stuff around with him and show somebody who he was and what he did. And I didn't know that I was doing that when I was making these photographs. I just thought I was recording this stuff for myself, for my archives. Later, when we had this show in Dusseldorf and I saw all of these things, they were so personal. I thought, and I didn't really know that about that's what I was doing when I was doing it. And I think the other good thing about it was that I didn't intend to show them. So I wasn't working for a show, and I never do. I never make paintings because I'm going to have a show. And I just make the work because I feel like doing it. And then after making work for a while, you sort of decide what you want to show or what you want to do. Like this photograph, I quite like. It's hard to know what you're looking at. And it is part of a sculpture where Clytemnestra is smacking Agamemnon in the head. This is Agamemnon sitting in the bathtub. It's made out of design cast, and this was in a studio I had in Brooklyn. And there's a painting I made of a Japanese geisha here, and I liked very much this kind of light leaking through it, which was very much like the photograph we looked at over there. So, anyway,
I would like to ask, these insights in your life, in your work. You see also paintings which are in focus, all this. Isn't it more than give structure to your biography? Would you say the main is entrance into your private life? Or are these photographs not a lot more than a documentary or recording of your life? Do you remember the discussion about privacy, that these photographs a lot more.
They're more than private?
In focus on subjects like life and death, or loss and love. That there are essentially
I think
discussed in the medium of these photographs.
Well, I think it's very hard to talk about those kind of things. I think people have to look at the photographs and decide if they see those things as aspects of them. But whatever... you wonder when you look in a book what constitutes being in the book, or why is a photograph selected? And I think it shows people that live in particular kind of spaces. And I mean, there's a photograph here in my studio with a big girl painting, and some other pictures called The Treatise on Melancholia. And then there's my father and I standing there. Now, he's not here anymore. He's dead now. And so for me, I took a picture of this because I wanted to show the scale of the painting, but I also wanted to take a picture with my father. Is that about life and death or loss? Is it personal? Yeah. But I think that one... this is actually a sculpture called The Singer Must Die for the Lion Is Song. It was a song by Leonard Cohen. And this is one of the guys from the Beastie Boys sitting on this chair, sort of like... I thought he was kind of like... Waiting for Godot, or... but anyway, does anybody have any more questions about anything? Yes.
You mentioned earlier, talking about the camera,
Yeah, well, that's kind of, I guess there's a timelessness to them, I think, and I don't like everything that's crispy and new.
Mm-hmm.
I live in a building that looks old. I like old clothes, and I don't know that progress is glass buildings and shiny new things. And so the sculpture I make also, actually this sculpture doesn't have these trees in it anymore, but it looks kind of like a Cycladic piece of sculpture. There are things that I could put out in the landscape that don't... Their cry to be modern doesn't disfigure the landscape somehow. I think that all of my work has to do with time in some way. At some moment, it had to do with simultaneity of time and that notion of, if I made, say, the, I don't know if anybody has ever seen a broken plate painting, but I thought, okay, there's one surface that is the surface of the painting, and then there's some kind of drawing that is superimposed on top of that. And the space in between what's pictorial and what's physical is somewhere in that battle, somewhere is my area of interest. And I think the notion of seeing, depth of field, something that is... distance is something that's very important to me. But distance, not only a closer or farther away or left to right, but like in time travel. And so many works feel like they existed at one time and then somebody else showed up and intervened in some way and did something else to them. So you're not reading from left to right, but you're reading veiled moments in time. And those kind of interventions make somehow they question the existence of the first part of the painting. So works have a history, and lots of times I'll that happens in the photography. It happens in my paintings where I found. A mirror, the 18th century, 19th century mirror that I gave to my first wife, Chinese mirror, and I thought I'd like to make a painting of that because I liked the way that the magnesium was breaking up on the mirror, so there were these spots. And then I liked the way the enamel sat in front, and I thought when I photographed it, it... you really notice that space, the difference between the space of the mirror and the space of the image that was painted. So I started to, I took it out, I printed it on a computer, and when I went out to Montauk, it was raining and the sun was very bright, and it bleached this photograph out, and it changed the photograph, and there were thumbprints on it also. And I looked at that and I thought, well, that looks to me like a painting. So I photographed that with a digital camera, and then, or I had somebody do it, I didn't do it, and then printed these things that were about 12 feet by 10 feet, and this kind of a ephemeral Chinese woman was floating through in this sort of cocoon-like shape, and I thought, okay, that's a blank canvas. So you asked me about nostalgia or whatever. It brings its own ethnographic sense with it, its own landscape with it, and then I start to paint on top of that, so somehow I can be an Indian sign painter or a Chinese painter. I don't have to keep my identity as a guy from Brooklyn, or I could do that sometimes, but I can be many different things. So selecting these different kinds of surfaces and different sort of images or materials to work with gives me another life as another artist. So I can be, what did Walt Whitman say? So what if I contradict myself? I contain multitudes. And so, yes, anybody ever, yes? I don't know if I conquered anything. What I like to do is paint the most. And I think painting really has given me the insight into everything else that I do. I've been a painter ever since I was a little kid. And after finishing this last film, I was so tired of talking to other people and translating any ideas to them, or... And then there's just such a process that, I mean, I'm actually in the process now of nurturing this thing into the public. It was mentioned that we showed it in a couple of festivals. I mean, it was at Venice. We showed the movie at the Venice Film Festival, and in Toronto recently. And I guess it could be confusing to... someone trying to follow all of the interests that I might have. But on the other hand, you know, if you think of somebody like... if Van Gogh was a painter, but he wrote letters also, so his letters are... Or say if you have, say, Picasso paintings, and then you've got children's paintings, kinder paintings, and then you could just sort of pick those works. And then he might make ceramics for a while, or might make sculptures. Or I think that most artists, or many artists, do different practices. I know, but I kind of tend to separate the things. I mean, I want paintings to be mute, and paintings to be paintings, and movies not to be videos. I mean, if I make a movie, I'd make a movie that's a movie that you could go to and see in the movies. Or if I make sculpture. And I definitely had no intention of being a photographer, and I don't even know if I am a photographer. But I did use a photographic machine to take these pictures, and I think that there's something in them that's very physical and emotional that is particular to those particular pictures. I mean, there's something, you know, I remember when Jean-Michel was alive, and he asked me a question about something, and I said, well, I would have done this. He says, well, this is my version, he said. And I think that's true. I mean, this is just my version of photography. I actually saw a book that someone made about Stanley Kubrick's photographs from 1945 to 1950. Reiner Krohn made this. Showed me a book today. They were extraordinary. I mean, I had no idea that Stanley Kubrick made photographs. So if you're dead, maybe it'd be better if I was dead. Really. And then you could kind of find these photographs and thank her for collating them or whatever. Say, oh, wow, I didn't know Julian Schnabel took these. I kind of know his paintings. I know I've seen his movies. These are peculiar or whatever. And I just think that artists like to make things. And they mediate the world by making things. And it just takes different forms sometimes. Yeah. they're taken pretty good care of. The ones that I think are done the way they are, they get put carefully in a file, and there's a paper that's in between each one. And then there are other ones that I decide I want to do something else with, and they can end up on the floor, and I might do something. In fact, what I did do is... that picture, this woman over here, I took the photographs that were printed on the Polaroid, and I actually photographed them again and printed them on polyester and made some paintings that are 12.5 by 9.5 feet, four of these people that were institutionalized, and there's about 10 that are about 9 by 7 feet. And the way I worked on them is I actually made a pool of ink on the floor and put them face down and walked on them, because I didn't want to have a preconception about the kind of marks that would be there. And there was a great way that the ink was, and also putting them on the floor, there was dust and dirt on the floor, and it gave a roundness to the marks. And it's what I find amazing is how generic most people's paintings look. I mean, people are so damn accepting of the way paint goes on canvas, and that I don't understand. It's like, can't you find a better solution to that? It's like, why do you, when we see acting, you see many different kinds of actors, but there's only, say, one Christopher Walken, or, say, one Johnny Depp, or one Max von Sydow, or one Matthew Elmerich, or one Javier Bardem. I mean, so many different kinds of people. Most people, they can be good at whatever they're doing, but they're relatively boring to watch. But then there's some people that have this kind of thing that they do, and they can take it into another place that is sui generis. That's this place, and you go, wow. And you feel like... So I keep looking at painting, and I find it pretty grim, in fact, the landscape of contemporary painting. And solutions to just what really, you know, putting some kind of painted material on some kind of surface. But I keep trying to reinvent that for myself. Anybody else?
Do you have more images that you can check? I know that you think that they're blown up from the size they are actually.
You want to see them? I'll do it. Yeah, sure. Can we go through them real quick? Can we turn the lights off? I love to sit in the dark also. You know, it's funny. You know how I met Rula, actually, and she's the author of this movie, the author of the book that the film is based on. It's called Miral. And I was having a show at the Palazzo Venezia in Rome, and I was wearing my pajamas and walked into the mayor's office, Walter Veltroni. And anyway, later that afternoon, she... knew him, came to have lunch with him. He said, you know, this morning, a guy came into my office in his pajamas and he turned all the lights off. She said, he sounds like a real nut. He said, no, he's not a nut. He's a painter. His name is Julian Schnabel, and he is having a show at the Palazzo Venezia. He said, oh, yeah, I was invited to that, but I'm not going to go. She said, no, you should go. Anyway, that's how I met her. Wow. See, there's a self-portrait. It's nice to take a picture where it looks like I didn't take the picture. And anyway, those are some paintings called Christ's Last Day that are painted on X-rays. And the X-rays came from, I found them in an abandoned house near the hospital in Berck, where I made the film about Jean-Dominique Bauby. This is on 11th Street in my studio. I guess that must be about 3 or 4 years ago. Let's see another one. Or you want to go back? You want to go back? Is there any question about the last one? Like, where'd I get the coat? Okay. All right. Let's see the next picture. That's a self-portrait. I like the idea that it doesn't look like I took the picture. Everything is smoke and mirrors. Okay, let's see another one. I designed the Gramercy Park Hotel, and so I took some pictures of... That's a painting of mine called The Teddy Bear's Picnic. It's not there anymore. This was a bronze table, but all of the objects that are there I built. I like the edge also. Okay, let's see another one. It's pretty murky, but I like it. There is Takashi Murakami and me. And I have no idea what you know which ones are in this pile here, but let's see another one. I lost the hat.
This one has a lot of soil.
There's Mickey. Mm-hmm. I tried wanting to make myself disappear more. He's really sweet. I mean, he's very, very, he's a very sweet, gentle guy, not at all brash, and a really sensitive guy. Did anybody see the wrestler?
Yeah.
Pretty good performance, huh? Anyway, let's see another one. I didn't take this photograph. It's just the front of my building. I don't know who took it. I don't know why it's there.
Okay. It's the end of the book. So
oh,
it's
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
So we start the book having...
With the end.
No, we start the book with overpainted Polaroids, which I think is very, very beautiful. So just to add this, we have a different kind of paper, and you have a...
I didn't know that was in the book. Can we see another
okay.
picture?
And the end is... Yeah, look, I'm sorry. This is the end of the book.
It's okay. Don't be mm-hmm. sorry. It's fine. There it says Palazzo Ciuppi at the top. And this building, I built a few floors on top of it. And these actually are based on the original doors to this building. Let's see another picture.
I'm sorry, these are, yeah.
Don't be sorry.
No, but...
That is a detail of a toilet. And a big purple shape. But like I said, you know, I love accidents. I love the way this purple shape looks. I painted on 17th century French wallpaper and used oil paint, and it makes a nice kind of halo around the marks. How did I get in there?
Yeah, there are a few.
Let's see what else you have. Okay, this is a color picture of... That's a room in my house. And some paintings that say, Ogni angelo il suo lato spaventoso, which means every angel has his terrifying side. I built the fireplace, the floor, the ceiling, the windows, the cornices, the table. Did not make the chandeliers. That's the seventh floor. That's my living room. Okay, without furniture in it. This is Dennis Hopper. That's on the wall in my studio, and he was one of my best friends. He died a few months ago. I had the photograph on the wall before he died. Anyway, you know, when I started making the movie, Dennis was, he played Bruno Bischofberger in the first film I made, Basquiat. And he told me that when he first directed his first movie, John Ford showed up on the set, and he said, he saw some people saying, okay, listen, I'll tell you the first thing you have to know about movie directing. Just make sure everybody's doing something all the time. Just tell them to do anything. Whatever they're doing, nobody's sitting around. Anyway, that's what he told me. Okay, can I see another one? Ah, this is a painting I made of Rula in a... Eugenie the Second, Napoleon II's wife Eugenie, who is played by Emma DuCone in *The Diving Bell and the Butterfly*. I actually designed that dress for her, and she was wearing it in *The Diving Bell and the Butterfly*. And Rula's the same size as her, so I borrowed the dress from Pathé and made a painting of her there. And that's a painting called *View of Dawn in the Tropics*. And there's some Polaroids lying on the floor. I think this is in the end papers of the book. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's see something else. Ah, yes. That's in my studio also. Part of a painting from 20 years ago called Carrot is a diamond to a rabbit. But you can't really see the rabbit at the moment. Okay, what else do you have here?
This is not. Mm-hmm.
I think there's Porfirio and me, and there's Petra.
This is the model of the exhibition in Toronto.
With the model of the exhibition in Toronto, I'm sure you all needed to see that.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see what else. Armida, I was thinking of making a banner for the Met, for the opera Armida, which I never saw, but I did something else instead. Okay. It's painted on a cow skin. What else we have? So I'm sorry that there are not very many photographs of the from the book, but I guess you see on the... Hi, Aggie. What else do you have? Ah, okay, that's my studio in Montauk, and that's my dog, Tina. A couple of surfboards and a painting, an Amor Misericordioso painting that is unfinished. That's from, I guess, about 4 years ago.
Julian, could I ask a question?
Please.
When you have a self-portrait like this,
yes.
Is your camera on a timer, or how are you doing?
I set the thing up and I tell somebody to press the button.
Okay.
Let's see another one. These are the Christ's Last Day paintings on the X-ray paintings without me in the picture. Aggie, I was in another photograph where I was in the picture. Okay. Next. That's my daughter, Stella. She is actually an actress, and she plays in the last film I made. She plays Lisa, the good Jewish girl. Next. That's Milton, my dog. And that was taken, I guess, in 2004. Maybe before that. No, 2002. I don't remember. Anyway, Milton's dead now. I've been trying to have him stuffed, and the guy who was going to do that, I don't know if his refrigerator broke or what happened, but, I mean, he hasn't gotten back to me, and it's been about 3 years. What, darling? It's a bull terrier. You know, like General Patton had.
Gainsbourg had one too.
Who did?
Gainsbourg. Gainsbourg had
one. Good. Can I see another one? That's a sculpture called Gollum in Brooklyn. I had a studio in Brooklyn for a while I was building the building. And I like the way the branches were coming out of its head. Branches are on the other side of the fence. Again, this is, I guess this is a sepia photograph, so... what else do you have there? There's the camera. And that's a Chinese painting of mine behind it.
Oh, one of the ones I was talking about with that image that had gotten bleached, that came from the mirror, that I kind of painted her out of the painting. What else we have? There's Olmo, my son, with the pants on his head. All right, we can turn the lights back on. It's a little bit bright. Can we turn it down a little bit? Do you remember The Godfather, the movie? Hello, Peter, how you doing? Do you remember the movie The Godfather, when Hyman Roth is brought the piece of cake, and he says, a smaller piece? I felt like I wanted to see a thing on Saturday Night Live where somebody brings a cake and he goes, a smaller piece. And then the guy comes back and he says, a little bit smaller. And he goes back and goes, can it be a little bit bigger? No, just a little bit bigger than that, okay? A little smaller. So I think, could we make the lights just a little bit lower? A little bit lower. Any other questions? Aggie, you came at the end, but I'm so happy you're here. Cause
we couldn't wander in.
Well, they moved the library. It wasn't... I guess I'm supposed to sign a bunch of books now, right? Yes, excuse me.
I'm just curious, what drives you to paint, write the movie?
Well, basically, what I want to do all the time is paint. But I can't paint all the time because sometimes you need to be pregnant in order to paint. You need to, and there's always something that I want to do. And sometimes, for example, this morning I woke up. Hey, Eddie. How are you? Great. Okay, example, what happens? Eddie is a great master. He's a yoga teacher. And I went to Eddie's class, and I'm not a very good yogi, but I was loved the teacher. And in his temple, there was a poster of Shiva. And I saw this, and I thought, wow, that would be a great surface to paint on. So I asked Eddie if I could photograph that, and then I bring it back. And I made these paintings that are about 11 by 8 feet of Shiva from this poster that was about this big. And I was just reacting to whatever image was in that. So that day, I went to yoga, and I saw that. I see paintings everywhere. I mean, this morning I woke up, and it had been raining outside, and I had a Paul Frankel couch that I left out on the terrace, and the laminate started to separate, and I turned over the wood, and it had this extraordinary drawing on, and it looks like 18th century Chinese scrolls. But it was just laminate from that, and so basically it was about that big, and it had an angle, so I thought, God, that would be a great big painting. So I photographed those things, and I wanted to print that surface and then paint on that. So, you know, wherever I go, I see things. And a really interesting thing happened to me about 2 weeks ago. There was, after the Venice Film Festival, I thought I would go down to a friend of mine owns this island that used to belong to Nureyev called Ligale. It's near Positano. And I thought I'd go down there and see if we won the Venice Film Festival, I'd fly back to Venice. Well, I didn't. I didn't win it. But I had my vacation anyway, which was worth it, even though we didn't win. We were in Ligale, and I was going to Positano, which is about 20 minutes, 15 minutes by boat. And I had a friend. I said, you know, I know this guy named Vito Gargiulo from Positano. Now, in 1976, I was in Milan, and I was living there, and I didn't have any money, and I met a guy, and I said I'd make 10 paintings and give him whatever drawings I made for $3,000. And he gave me this place to live near Via Piazza 24 di Maggio, and you could come sit over there or come out in the front wherever you want. And then hired a guy to make some stretchers, and his name was Vito Gargiulo, and he was from Positano. So when I lived on 20th Street, I was walking down the street one day, and they were working at Teddy Roosevelt's house. There was some Italian cement workers, and I said, where are you from? He said, I'm from Positano. I said, You know Vito Gargiulo? He's kind of handsome. He has blue eyes. And he said, you should see his sister. So anyway, 10 years, this was 76, 87, I went down. I was with Francesco Clemente in Conca di Marini. And I went to Positano, got to the dock, asked a friend of mine, Vittoria. I said, you know Vito Gargiulo? He said, yeah, he lives right over there. So I went over to his house, and it was as if I hadn't seen him for 5 minutes. I just, and it was great to see him, and I really, really, really liked him. And then here I am going to Positano again. So I said to someone who, this man who owned the island bought Franco Zeffirelli's house and made a hotel called Tre Ville out of it. And he knew a woman named Fausta, who worked with Franco Zeffirelli. And she was from Positano. And she came over to the house one day and said, do you know Vito Gargiulo? And she said, yeah, I do. I said, could you call him and tell him I'm going to come to Positano? She said, sure. So I went to the hotel in Tre Ville, and I was waiting to see Vito. And I really lose track of time. And all of a sudden, a guy shows up, but it wasn't Vito. And it was his brother, Giuseppe. Vito died the week before. He was very strong, and he just got a virus. He was eight, I didn't realize how much time away. He was 80 years old. He died. And his brother said to me, "You know, you left something with my brother. I met you in Milan in 1977, and you left something with my brother." So he said, "Well, can I come back here tomorrow and I'll give it to you?" And I said, "Okay." And he showed up the next day, and he brought a shoebox with him. And in the shoebox, it was my handwriting that was on it, what I wanted. And he opened it up, and there was a face, a relief. I made this face out of DOS, which is a self-drying clay. And it looked like a woman's face, and there was a blindfold over it. Not unlike the girl with no eyes in my paintings. Blindfold over it, and it was brown and green. And I guess I left it with him, and what I wanted to do was put it on a painting in 1977. I totally forgot about it. So his brother handed me this thing after Vito was dead. So I thought it seemed weird to take it away from there. And there was a scenography on the wall in the salon of this hotel that was about as big as that whole center panel of the wall of Cavalleria Rusticana, where there's a battle going on. So I took the head and I stuck it on this painting and wrote Vito Gargiulo 1976 to 2010. So it stayed with his name and on there. And I wrote Humanity Asleep over this old thing and made a painting and left it there. And you asked me how I make stuff. How does it happen? Do you wake up and decide what you want to do? It depends what you do every day. I mean, for me, if you are in the practice of making things, you leave things around, you come up and pick up something sometime later. There's some cul-de-sacs that you have with your work, and then the pictures that I usually keep are paintings that I'll use later or refer back to, or there'll be a key for some paintings I didn't make yet. And so it's all of the practice of making objects and one thing giving birth to the next, and so there's a continuum of things like that. It's a long-winded answer, I know, but I thought, anybody else? Yes.
Under the impression that the Polaroid materials are no longer being made, are you still be working a camera of that scale?
Well, one thing is, somebody bought that company recently, a guy that I know.
So yes, I think absolutely, yes.
I think they're going to keep making the film. Some other company started to make film that didn't look as good. I actually bought most of the film before that happened. So I have film to use, but they are going to continue making it. But I never think like that. I might not make... I'm not thinking I need to go and make a bunch of other photographs. The other day, my daughter Stella needed a picture, so I took some pictures of her. And I was doing pretty good for a while. It's sort of like... it's very physical, and it's kind of like surfing in a way, something you get into the rhythm of whatever that thing is, and you do it for a while, but it's like acting also. Once your energy level goes down, you kind of see it in the work, and I sort of stop then. And I don't really have a program of like a 9-to-5 job, the way, I think Gerhard Richter goes in at 9, comes back at 5, I don't know what he does, but something more like that. And I don't do it like that. When I made the last film, I had to go to Israel for, I think I went there in January 19th and didn't start, and there's pre-production, so you're there till March 19th, and then I shot a movie till June 22nd. So that's a very fixed kind of schedule. Once that was over, then there was some time, and then I edited the movie in Paris. But when I was in Paris, I was drawing or I was making something. Actually, I went over to Azzedine Elias' studio. He's a friend of mine, been a friend of mine for years, and he had a place where I could paint, and I was painting over there. So I usually if I'm making a film, it doesn't really take that long. And in the process of writing or pre-production and post-production, I'm usually painting. But I like to paint mostly outside in Montauk, and I do most of my paintings in the summer. I can see better outside. And I like to photograph outside also. Yes? What, darling? What book am I reading? I'm not reading any book. I tried to read a book recently, and there's a book about waves that Laird Hamilton gave me, Rogues, and I don't know what, what's the woman's name who wrote this book? It's looks pretty interesting. What book would I recommend to you? Have you ever read the book, what?
It's a library.
Okay, let's talk, I'll give you some books that I like. Have you ever read You Can't Win by Jack Black?
Great book.
That's the book I would recommend. Have you ever read Palestinian Without Identity by Abu Iyad? That's a good one. Master and Margarita is a great book. But what am I reading right now? I was trying to read a script that a friend of mine wrote, but I can't seem to get through it. It's very hard to read sometimes. I mean, I think I've been painting a lot. In fact, the other day I brought the paintings home from Montauk, and then I went upstairs and I looked at a painting that had been on top of my bed for a year, and I thought, I can make this better. I took it down and I started painting on it in the studio, and then I put it back over the bed, and I was looking at it, and I thought, oh, I got to change something. So I taped this brush to a bamboo pole and went up there. My girlfriend was lying in bed. I was standing on the bed repainting a corner of the painting. She complained that it smelled like oil paint in there. But I think when I'm painting, it's hard to think about anything else, and that's my favorite thing to do. But I did... I think when I'm doing whatever I'm doing, whether it's directing a movie or making a photograph, at that moment where that special moment happens, it's sort of like playing the saxophone. You hit that note, and there's something perfect in that, and in the spontaneity of that, that's kind of the exciting part. Later, you become the custodian of everything you did. You know, here we are talking about it, having a book signing. There's, you know, like souvenirs of parts of your flesh that are flying around, but doing that thing is worth it. I mean, I looked at a Cézanne painting the other day at the AGO, at the Art Gallery of Ontario, and I just looked at this little painting. It was about this big. It was green, and there was a bit of white in the middle, and I thought, the joy that this guy had when he was putting that bit of green and white down, you could just see it in the painting, and the privilege of being able to do that is worth everything, you know, the tribulations of dying, getting sick, compromise, whatever. It's the best thing that you can do. When I hear somebody like Sidney Lumet saying, being a movie director is the best job, that's not true. Being a painter is the best job. Because people don't have to know what you're doing. You don't even have to know what you're doing. You don't have to know if it's good or bad. You don't. You just have to, like, and you don't want to think when you're doing it either. And it's the beauty of it, that you're not thinking. You're just being there. And even if you're painting somebody from life, at a certain moment, while you're in the practice of doing that, there's something that takes over, and your hand is doing something, and you walk out of it. And I remember, what was it, Maureen Stapleton? Yeah, Maureen Stapleton was in the movie The Fugitive Kind with Marlon Brando, and she's making this crazy painting. She's the wife of some... this redneck sheriff in Louisiana, and she says, I don't know, after I paint, I feel altered in some way. And it was just beautiful for her to be married to this horrible cop and tell this guy who was sort of a beatnik that was in jail about her painting, and thought it was true. That's Tennessee Williams. Hi, Stella. That's my daughter, Stella. She's much prettier than the photograph I took of her. Yes.
Was that kind of a surreal experience, or
Let me ask you a question. It's going to take forever for us to be here if I'm going to sign some books. You think I should be signing books while we're talking?
Sounds like a great idea.
Because we could be here forever, no?
Absolutely. So let's roll into the book signing. And thank you so much for this.
But I'd
fantastic.
Like to answer his question. I didn't want to ignore. Can I have that pen right there? I'll sit here for
a signature pen.
You know, there was a moment in the movie where Christopher Walken is playing the. Thanks. It's okay.
You want to
light on you? I'm just going to answer his question, and then I don't know what we'll do. I mean, there are these books. They're all. They have plastic around them, right?
We should. Actually, some people have already purchased books, so they're waiting for theirs to be autographed.
Right. That's why they didn't walk out of the room or leave, because they were bored. They had that book and they wanted it signed. So when Chris Walken says to Jeffrey Wright, he said, you know, they call you, you know, you've been called the Piccaninny of the art world. No, he said, they called me, I was called the Eddie Murphy, oh, excuse me, you know, Chris said. I thought there was a lot of things that were very unfair that went on when John was alive, and I think that young artists are usually not very respected. Maybe it's a little different now, because there's a lot of young artists, or more young artists, that are getting money and more famous now, or whatever, but in those days, it was still very early, if you think of, say, guys like Barnett Newman and people that really didn't show till they were in their 40s. But I would say thank you to a young person instead of why'd you do that? And so my reason for making that movie was I thought I owed it to John. I was a little tough on him sometimes, and there was a scene where Gary Oldman walks into the basement and Rene Ricard is down. He says, come on over, I'll make a painting of you. And actually, this guy, Rockets Redglare, who's dead now, who was the drug dealer, he was also a comedian, he came down, he was walking down the street on 20th Street, and I saw him, and I said, where are you going, Rockets? He says, well, I'm going to go to Jean-Michel's, he's going to make a painting of me. I said, I'll make one of you. So he came over to my studio, and I made the painting of him instead. And Jean-Michel's feelings were hurt, and I was a jerk, you know. I was insensitive to whatever was happening there, and so I kind of wanted to show that in the movie. And I also think in a film, you can have somebody come back from the dead and see a painting that you painted for them, which is something. So I was always a movie fan. I never thought I was going to be a movie director. And when Jean died and a guy came to my studio to ask me questions about him, there weren't a lot of movie directors coming over and asking me what I thought. And I gave him some money to do some research, and I realized a tourist was going to make the movie. So I bought the rights back, rewrote the script, and I knew a lot of actors because they liked my paintings or whatever. And luckily, they kind of lent themselves to my endeavor in a way. I mean, Dennis was, you know, Dennis and Chris and Gary, and then other people did also. And I mean, I never had a camera. I mean, it's interesting that there's a book of photographs here because I'm a person that never had a camera in their life. I mean, everybody else was taking pictures of people, or I thought, well, that's what they do. I have a good memory. I remember what people look like. I remember these moments, and I didn't need. In fact, I don't really like to have my picture taken. I mean, the only pictures I like really of myself are pictures of me surfing, because I can't believe that I'm standing in a wave like that, and I want to record that feeling. But every other picture, particularly if they're family pictures or they're when you're standing, I don't know, there's something. Everybody's got them. I don't know why everybody's standing in front of a monument somewhere. And then they take that home, and it's like they're part dead already. I know what the Indians were saying about having their image stolen. So anyway, I tried not to steal anybody's image when I was making these photographs. Actually, this photograph here is taken of a friend of mine named Tucker Geary. He built my studio and my house out of Monterey, and actually he died. I don't know why I painted this purple shape in there, but I guess maybe I thought something was, there was something foreboding in there. Anyway, he died a few months ago. I like this picture because it sort of looked like it was taken in Mexico in 1950. So it's about time travel. I mean, I like looking at, I like
seeing that in this camera. I think that's why I like using this particular camera. Anyway, I think we've had enough.
Great. Yeah.
No?
Yes,
well, you can always say something to me while I'm signing.
There you go. Yeah, because the library is going to close.